Well, Jesse, a tough loss for the Jays. They get shut down for most of the day by the presumptive NL Cy Young winner in Chris Sale, who was great once again. But
yep.
Y-Rod, good stuff from him today. But the Jays, late in this one, a lot of squandered opportunities. They send out Spencer Horwitz, first of all. Late in the game, he smashes his third home run in the last two games. And then still, both teams trading opportunities in extras before an error from Addison Barger in the bottom of the 11th, and the Jays losing the series. A tough one to swallow because it felt so winnable, but in the end, a 4-3 walk-off defeat to the Braves in Atlanta.
Well, when you're that close in a game where Chris Sale does what we expected him to do, like the fact that Yariel Rodriguez and the rest of the Blue Jays pitching staff was able to hold the Braves to no runs through the first little bit, or one run through the first little bit. I mean, that should be a winnable game. And that puts even more emphasis on, you know, what happened in the latter stages there, where you start to understand why the Blue Jays are not a playoff team. Like, the reality of this is, like, teams that play crisp, quality baseball win that game easily. And the Blue Jays didn't. Now, do they have young guys playing in the field, playing in new positions and that sort of thing? Yes, they do. You know, Barger, that throw, obviously not a good throw. Spencer Horwitz airmailed one earlier in the game and then botched that grounder. I mean, these are issues that the Blue Jays are going to have to deal with. And there's a learning curve, but at the same time, like, these are tough pills to swallow because you're getting losses as a result of putting guys in uncomfortable positions.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well. Lots of texts on the text line. 590-590, name and location of the people's text line. That is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Some sloppy baseball lane this one. Jays misplaying a ball in the ninth. In the 11th, Zach Pop kind of just staring at one on the mound or just on the field. Addison Barger with a bit of a whoopsie throw in the 11th. You can't blame Vladdy on that one. The runner was getting right to the bag. Yeah. And I mean, no one's sticking their arm out for that. That's a good way to hurt yourself. So, and it was also just not that close to him. So not on Vladdy. But, you know, just some sloppy decision-making and play from some young guys. And you laid it out. I think that's to be expected, like, to a certain extent, because a lot of them are so young or don't have a ton of experience at the very least. But I mean, for example, in extras, and some of it can be laid at the feet of the players themselves. And some of it, I think, can be laid at the feet of John Schneider and the decision-making from the coaching staff, right? So in extras, for example, I didn't love the decision to keep Kirk after Vladdy gets intentionally walked, right? Mm-hmm. So Vladdy gets walked intentionally. They put up the four fingers. You now have runners on first and second with nobody out. And I know Kirk has been playing better as of late, especially since he's become like kind of the full-time catcher, sort of. But I mean, you could have either asked him to bunt, or you could have pinch hit him. You could have done one of those two things, and neither of those two things happened, right? So again, he could have bunt. I don't know why he didn't bunt. Maybe you take your chances with Kirk. That's the thought process.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to do that, and you need someone with no outs, with runners on first and second, I don't know. You could have pinch hit Will Wagner, for example, in that situation. Kirk was DHing today, so you could have done kind of anything you wanted with that DH spot. And again, now, you know, the righty-lefty matchup with Iglesias and with Will Wagner, who's a lefty, obviously. But Iglesias, despite being a righty, is still obviously very, very good. He's put late in high-leverage situations to the Braves for a reason. But I don't know. Like, I think I would have either taken the chance with Will Wagner, or I would have at least asked Kirk to bunt. I think in those particular situations, and I thought it was kind of silly that neither of those things happened. Ultimately, does it really matter? Probably not in a season like this, but still, I think you want to see them do those kinds of small things right down the stretch if you are to believe they are going to have some kind of competitive spirit in 2025.
Yeah, and the fact remains, like, a lot of the guys that are on the bench and waiting to get at bats, like, you want to see them and how they perform in clutch situations. And I mean, Spencer Horwitz has been phenomenal at bat in clutch situations, not necessarily in the field quite yet, but certainly at bat, he's been able to get it done when it matters the most. Another home run today, which is just he's on an absolute heater. He's on an absolute heater. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Kirk, you sort of know what you get at this point. Like, yeah, he's a little bit hotter than he's been throughout the season, but nonetheless, like, he's still 1-for-5 today. Like, wasn't a great day for him at the plate. So yeah, I would have liked to see something there too, but the coaching staff felt otherwise.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Before we go back to the text line, which is 590-590, name and location, or go to the text line for the first time, people's text line certainly always open. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Russ in New Jersey. Russ, what's up? What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, guys. You know, you talked about Spencer Horwitz. Now, I know you have Sale, who's probably Cy Young out there, left-handed pitcher, but this is why we're here today to play these games. The wins, losses mean nothing. Okay, I would have put him in the lineup. I want to see him get that learning experience of playing against that great left-handed pitcher. You know, you expect him to be there next year. You expect him to be, I don't want to say, you know, he's going to be a decent part of this team, or, you know, it looks like he can be a very good player. And do I think he would have hit Chris Sale? Probably not, no. But I want to see him in the lineup because the games don't mean anything. And I want Spencer Horwitz to get experience against one of the best pitchers in the game, who's a left-handed pitcher. That's he's a guy that you want to see there now to the end of the season every day, because I think he's shown he can be a very good player. But let's give him that experience. Why sit him out, especially after last night, what he did, but even not, without last night? Don't sit a guy out when we're just trying to find out who's who for next year on this team. I want to see him in there again, Sale.
Hey, man, thanks for the call, Russ. Appreciate it, as always. I think, look, I get the inclination to put Horwitz in there against Sale. And like Russ laid out, the reason he wasn't is because of the left-on-left matchup. Basically, yeah. The only left-handed bat, at least in the starting lineup, was Lo Perfido. And they did that because Varsho wasn't in the lineup today, right? And Lo Perfido was batting ninth. But none of Varsho, Lucas, Wagner, and Horwitz were in the lineup to start, despite basically all of them, well, not Varsho, but the other three, Lucas, Wagner, and Horwitz, all having great games last night. So I definitely understand it. Here's the thing, though. We're not talking about, I said this to you in the pregame show. We're not talking about like a random lefty call up. We're talking about Chris Sale, who's going to win the Cy Young this year. Mm-hmm. And to Chris's point, you want to see him have more ABs against those guys. Here are the stats coming into today. Here are the stats, because Horwitz punishes left or right-handed pitching. That it's pretty remarkable what he can do against right-handed pitching. For a guy who has not had that much major league experience, obviously he had the cup of coffee last year. I guess he's played for approximately half the season this year, but has largely had the biggest moments prior to this year, obviously in the minor leagues. Yeah. And here were his stats coming into today. He was hitting 170 with a 445 OPS against left-handed pitching. With a larger sample size in the minors, in AAA, he hit 241 with a 614 OPS, but the OPS, he had a lot of walks against some really bad AAA pitching, right? So, and even like if you want to say that's like, it doesn't matter, over the last three seasons against lefties, he has over 300, and I think it's 380 or 370 ABs against lefties in particular. And that's where all the stats come from. So I'm not sure. Like I know the impetus is like, okay, we want to learn more about Spencer Horwitz against left-handed pitching. But I kind of think we know everything there is to know about Spencer Horwitz against left-handed pitching. Like I think that's fine. Like I think that's fine for Horwitz to be a great bat against righties for you to use on maybe the strong side of a platoon, depending on what his role is next year. I think that's totally fine, frankly.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been in the lineup or will be in the lineup next year when the same thing happens and he's more of a regular. Like, I just think that in any world, facing Chris Sale, given what we know about Spencer Horwitz and the top time that he has against lefties, like, he's never going to be in the lineup to face a guy like Chris Sale, because there's enough of a sample size in the minor leagues. It's not a lot of at-bats at the majors. But another thing is, like, he had such an incredible day yesterday. And you know that you're putting him up there. Like, you're just serving him up to Chris Sale. Just go up out there and have three strikeouts. And he's still a young guy, Horwitz. And you don't want to crush his confidence, especially coming off such a great performance that he had last night. And ultimately, it worked. You brought him in a better situation for him, and he came into the game and hit another home run.
Yeah.
So it actually worked out perfectly from the Blue Jays' perspective, better than having him go out there and just whiff three straight times against Chris Sale and just add to Chris Sale's strikeout totals. Like, that doesn't really do anybody any good. I think there is an element where you have to play to your player's strengths. You know that he struggles against lefties. Is it going to hurt him in terms of playing time next year? Possibly. He might have to be in a platoon because he's so weak against lefties. Yeah. But you have to understand what your player's strengths and weaknesses are, and there was no point in having him out there today.
I talked about this with Danielle yesterday. I am curious what you think about Horwitz's future on this team. Now, I've said a billion times, even to you, that Horwitz is on the team next year, period. Like, this is before yesterday. I think I had made this decision like a month and a half, 2 months ago, essentially, that, you know what, no matter what really happens, he has a spot on the 26-man active roster come end of March, early April next season when we get to opening day. Great, that's fine. What his role is next season, I honestly don't know what it is, because it does, I think, largely depend on A, what happens for the Blue Jays in free agency, and B, what like the cascading effect of those moves in free agency will be. Because like there are a lot of scenarios that could play out here. There's a scenario in which Vladdy is your almost everyday first baseman, and then Horwitz is a bench guy who goes to first when Vladdy's at third base, for example, or when Vladdy's DHing or whatever, like that you can move him around. Or there's a scenario in which Horwitz is your first baseman, largely maybe the strong side of a first base platoon, if Vladdy is playing at third base often next year. Now, the problem with that, I suppose, Jesse, is that if you're going to get like average defense from a lot of these guys, you kind of need there to be some power. Like, you need to get power, especially from the first base, which is not a premium defensive position. And you're getting that right now from Vladdy. You're getting like ridiculous stats and results from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I think you can hope that you're going to get that again next season. So if that's the case, and Vladdy, like on any day you're not putting Vladdy there, you can get by with it if it's only like a handful of times. But, you know, I do wonder, we've gotten three home runs from Horwitz in the last couple of days. And I think the biggest knock on him was just that he wasn't necessarily going to hit for power all the time. Now, here we are. He's blasting home runs. It's like a two-game sample size, obviously, of three home runs in two games. But can your mind be changed in these remaining, I guess it's now 18 games after today? Can your mind be changed as to what Horwitz's power is in 18 games? Or, you know what I mean? Or are we like past that point? Like, do we know what Horwitz is at this point?
I think he can be a 20 home run guy. I'm not sure I'd be willing to go past that. So then it becomes like, what do you want out of your first base position? If Vladdy's a third baseman, you can't have Spencer Horwitz as your first baseman. I don't see that as an enviable situation for the Blue Jays. In fact, because he struggles so much against left-handed pitchers, I think he's got to be in some sort of a platoon at second base. Like, you don't want to do this with every position, but the fact that his defense struggles the way it does at second base, and the fact that you want more power at first, you'll find at bats for him. But I think second base is the primary platoon spot that I would look to for maybe a Horwitz and Clement next year.
The only problem with that is, for me, is just that there's such a logjam of guys who kind of largely play second base. Yeah. Like, there's Will Wagner. Yeah.
David Schneider,
who I think probably at this rate, if he continues playing the way he's been playing, will not be a Blue Jay next year. I don't know. I'm not saying he necessarily gets traded, but he'll probably start with the Bisons if this continues. So there's that for Schneider. But still, like, you have to include him. So it's Schneider. It's Wagner. It's Horwitz in theory. It's Leo Jimenez. I guess Relvis Martinez, if you're really counting him there as well. Like, there's so many guys. And the other part of it too is, I was chatting about this with Danielle yesterday. Horwitz has not actually made a start at second base since mid-August.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That is crazy.
And then the couple innings we saw from him at second base today
makes two errors.
Not a great amount of plays for Horwitz at second base.
That's an excellent point. Like, I think, like I said, you find at bats for him. So if he becomes like the guy that spells Vladdy at first more often, and you want to give Vladdy more reps at DH. Or even if Spencer Horwitz wants to DH from time to time, and you find a way to get the Will Wagner or Ernie Clement in. Like, I think that's why this time from now until the end of the season is so important, because you're trying to really figure out, like, who is a lock? Like, who do you consider a lock to be on the team? In both of our opinions, Spencer Horwitz has to be on the team in some capacity because you want that bat, whether he hits 15, 20 home runs and hits 280. Like, the Jays don't have enough of those guys anyway. So you need that bat. You have to work around that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality. Madison Barger, Ernie Clement, Will Wagner, Spencer Horwitz, they're not all going to be there. I think Spencer Horwitz is one that I'm at the point where I think it's pretty safe to say that he's one of those guys that should be here come next year, and you find a place for him.
There are just a lot of guys on the team. I think Barger is one of these guys as well. I think Lucas is as well, that have played well enough that I believe they are major league ball players, that they could play five out of seven times a week, like in a seven day week, essentially. I just am not sure that's possible for them
here
on the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Right.
That's an excellent point.
I think Nathan Lukas could probably be the fourth outfielder on a bunch of teams. He could probably be a starting outfielder on a bunch of teams, despite the fact that he's 30 years old. Addison Barger is a young guy. He could probably be part of a platoon at third base, or he could find regular playing time on another team. And I mean, maybe that team is the Blue Jays. I think he might actually be the guy who has maybe a closer shot of finding more regular playing time on the Blue Jays. But I mean, Leo Jimenez is one of those guys, and I think he's a major league ball player. Will Wagner, it kind of looks like he is. It's a small sample size. You want to see more. But it's just, I think they're going to have some tough decisions to make in the offseason, because it's just not possible. Even if you give every one of them bench spots, which I don't think is going to happen, it's just not possible for all of them to find regular playing time. And I think the other part of it, too, is, Jesse, depending on what happens in the offseason, free agency wise, I'm not sure you want there to be like a platoon at every position, right?
Yeah,
you kind of want there to be regular guys at most positions. I think I could live with a platoon at second base if it's, let's just say, Ernie Clement and Will Wagner. Let's say that's the platoon at second base. Horwitz is the backup first baseman. And now you're making decisions as to signing a free agent for third base, or if Vladdy's playing third, you're signing a free agent for first base, whether that's like a Pete Alonso or a Christian Walker or like a Rhys Hoskins if he opts out. Like something like that. That would be suitable, I think. You can get your thumpers, as Barker likes to say, in the outfield and DH. Like, you could get a left fielder, which they desperately need. Or DH is obviously the easiest position to fill because they don't play the field, so you can kind of get away with anyone there. But, you know, it just, you need to get someone. Like, you can't backfill everything eternally. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Like, you don't want a platoon more than one position. Like, it would be chaos. Like, remember when we were talking about versatility with the Blue Jays, and it was thought of as like this incredible strength, and the front office was touting it, that it was like, oh, we have all these different guys, they all play different positions around the infield, and we can use it. Yeah, it's great. But what you would really like is for one or two or three of those guys to really elevate and steal a position, so that you don't have to go platoon and you don't have to find a way to fit in other guys' bats because one guy is performing better than the other. Like, you want to have Spencer Horwitz go out and do what he's doing, grab possession of a spot for the team next year. You would love if Ernie Clement would do the same thing. You would love if Addison Barger would do that. But now you're in a situation where you're kind of picking and choosing, being like, oh, versatility really worked, but do we want a platoon at first, second, and third? Like, no, we don't want to do that. So in theory, versatility was great, but now you want really good players. And while they may be good players, if you want to win a World Series, you can't just have a collection of eight good players in Vladdy. You need to have nine really good players, and a platoon is not the way to do that.
590-590, name and location. That's the text line. People's text line, of course, always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. I see a whole bunch here. I want to read some text here for you, Jesse. Tony from Kitchener. I don't get upset often, but Green is really pissing the fans off. I know the season is over, but play with some pride, man. He isn't a closer, especially against lefties. Why wasn't Yenis's pitching? He only threw four pitches. I think it's a valid question to say, like, hey, Yenis is going to probably pitched a little bit more. He has, I like to use the term circle of trust. Yenis's Cabrera, I was going to say next to Chad Green, are the only two guys in the circle of trust. I think Chad Green's in the circle of trust still, but I mean, boy, that the circle of trust is a dot these days as to who is in there. And the bullpen, I will give them some credit today. They acquitted themselves like decently well enough in terms of what you got from Little and Nance Pop for parts of his outing, certainly, but Nance and Little in particular, keeping it close. Swanson as well, keeping it close until Cabrera came in to get the single out. Chad Green, it's tough, right? Because I think I understand why you go to Chad Green, because, you know, Cabrera, lefty, kind of a lefty specialist, although he can be trusted to a certain extent to get righties out as well. But I think Chad Green, being paid a lot of money, is a guy who, for large chunks of the season at least, has been good. I think there is some luck involved when it comes to reading some of the numbers with FIP and so on as to his season-long results, but he is still, I think, the only remaining trusted reliever. And it's really tough for him to, it's tough that he has gotten some, like, essentially three straight outings where he has not been very good, right?
Yeah.
And he's given up the late, he's blown it. He's given up big runs in big moments. That's a tough spot to be throwing Chad Green out. But to Tony's point, I think Chad Green is a good reliever. I just don't think he is a closer, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, he's capable of handling opposing batters in high leverage. I'm just not sure he is a bona fide closer in the same way that Emmanuel Clase is, or like in any of the other guys we've seen close games for teams in the last several years.
Well, here's the interesting thing for Chad Green. Like, he didn't really ramp up until June is when he really started, you know, cooking and getting more appearances. He had a 0.9 ERA in June, 1.98 in July, 1.59 in August, and now in September, 32.40.
No.
Yeah. Right. That might not even be updated after today.
After today, honestly. Yeah.
It could be even more. But look, he's going through a rough patch. Like, that's pretty clear. But he hasn't been bad the whole season. I think if there's one guy, I think you're bang on, if there's one guy from this bullpen that you think can actually handle it, whether it's a seventh inning role or maybe he just gets knocked down a couple rungs when you decide to rebuild the entire bullpen, which is probably what they're going to have to do.
So.
Like, he's a guy that I think you could be willing to hold on to. You just don't want to have him necessarily in the higher leverage spots, even though before these three rough outings, he was actually doing a pretty good job for the most part. But if you're rebuilding the bullpen, I think he's a guy that you still want to look to, maybe hang on to. Just don't have him in the biggest spots like you unfortunately have to have him now, because your bullpen's been completely decimated.
Yeah, he is, I think, fine. It's just he's miscast, I think, as a closer.
Yeah.
Right? And I know he has had the closing role when looking for the Yankees, for example, prior to that injury, prior to the Blue Jays, his Blue Jays career. He had closing opportunities for the Yankees and did pretty well with them. But I mean, I'm not sure he's the exact same pitcher he was prior to the injury. And that's fine. He's still pretty effective. But it's just, I do believe it's just because everyone is kind of, because of the lack of depth on this team, because they're playing somewhat out of order in a sense, because we're not going to see Romano anymore. Yeah. That's been made clear from Arden Zwelling, of course, saying, I think it was yesterday, the day before, that Jordan Romano is done for the, like, he's not going to play anymore for the rest of the year. He's not going to see major league time. Jimmy Garcia is obviously not on the team anymore. Eric Swanson's been better, but he's not been what he was when the Jays traded for him. Yeah. And I mean, like, generally speaking, I would say, like, in a very loose sense, the volatility of any reliever year over year in Major League Baseball is pretty high, right?
Yes.
Like, it's just in a general sense. Obviously, there are some exceptions to that case. For example, Emmanuel Clase, as I mentioned before. But I mean, you know, how many people are Emmanuel Clase? Very few people, right?
Have you gone through the exercise of looking at this bullpen chart and determining who you want to?
Okay, I'll put it this way.
The Blue Jays should bring back?
Without looking, I will say Green will be back because he's under contract for next year. Yeah. Yennis Cabrera will be back because he's been pretty good, and he's also under contract for next year. I think it's a question mark with, I tend to believe Jordan Romano will be back next year because he is under contract one more year, but he's also making $8 million. He could get non-tendered and maybe re-signed at a lower deal, but he also, I don't know, will the Blue Jays want to do that to Romano after he's been a Blue Jay for so long? I'm not sure, but that's $8 million. A lot of cash for Jordan Romano, considering he's been injured a lot recently. I believe Swanson is making a fair amount of cash next year, so he could be non-tendered, maybe re-signed at a lower rate. But Swanson, otherwise, it's still a question mark with Swanson. Like, after that, the only other guy I think I would really feel all right in, only in a very, like, low leverage role, I would say is Brendan Little. But I mean, like, Ryan Burr, probably not. I mean, is Tommy Nancy? We've seen some flashes, but again, probably
Swanson,
not.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, is Yerry Rodriguez going to be on the team next year? Probably not. I mean, you could look to the minors and say Hagen Danner might be a Blue Jay next year, but I mean, that's the door is like the jury's way out on that. The door is still way open on any of those guys. Like, you are effectively needing to rebuild the bullpen from scratch. Like, you kind of have to. And I think it's a valid question. Fans have asked this. People have called in and texted in about this. I think it's a valid question to ask why the bullpen was not a bigger priority. And again, there were a lot of injuries. There's some regression. Some of that stuff can't be helped. But I mean, if there's one strength I can give Ross Atkins credit for, I know we're loath to give him credit for anything, but if one thing he's been like decent at, it's finding guys off the scrap heap or acquiring relievers on the cheap that have actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
And they almost deliberately didn't do that this year. You know what I mean? Like they traded away Nate Pearson, who, by the way, was involved in a combined no-hitter for the Cubs, the first combined no-hitter for the Cubs in 57 years or something like that. So yay for that. But like they give away Nate Pearson, they give away Jimmy Garcia. All right, Jimmy Garcia probably had to be done. But I think it's a valid question to ask why they didn't rebuild the bullpen. And I think a partial answer to that question, Jesse, might legitimately be they knew the team wasn't good enough to deserve lots of assets being spent on rebuilding the bullpen. And maybe that's true, but it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah, no, it's ugly. I think the question I have is, does the front office think they can get away with just doing what they've done in the past in terms of bringing in lesser known names and having them perform and building it that way and not spending a ton of money on the bullpen? Or because the bullpen has quite literally been bottom three in the major leagues the entire year, do they need to go out and get a big bullpen name? Now, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, responsible or irresponsible. Like, if you think a pitcher that's out there in free agency, one of the bigger names that's going to cost a lot of money, will actually help you and help your team be competitive next year, like, I think it's something they have to look at. Like, there are a number of, like, Kenley Jansen's making $16 million. It's a ton of money. Like, Ross Stripling's out there, Aroldis Chapman still at his advanced age, Daniel Bard. Like, there's a lot of names out there that people have heard of. And the question I have is, do the Blue Jays feel compelled to go out and get a big name because the bullpen has been such a disaster this year?
590, 590, name and location. Let's read a couple more texts before we take a break here, Jesse. Mike from Toronto. Mike says, I was going to text that Horwitz is to Atlanta like Kyle Schwarber is to the Jays. A killer. But the defensive side of Horwitz at second played a decent part of the comeback and win by the Braves. Not the only reason, but it highlights the discussion of how he won't be your everyday second baseman moving forward. Love the guy, not at second base, in my opinion. I think that's fair. And you know what? I see a quote here making the rounds on social media here from John Schneider. And it says here, I don't want to see guys are out of position. Perfect world, Spence isn't at second base. Game is going to dictate certain things. You can chalk it up to inexperience. End of the day, this is the big leagues. Got to make plays. True. But in a perfect world, Spencer Horwitz isn't at second. That's what John Schneider said. And I think that underscores the discussion we were talking about. It underscores the point from Mike on the text line. I think that does. I think that kind of is a little bit of a spotlight into the mind of the decision makers, I should say, when it comes to like where Horwitz is going to be longer term.
It's just so funny that there's always this like little caveat when you think he's going to be incredibly honest and like tell it like it is, there's always this little caveat. So he sets it up with the, in a perfect world, Spence should be on second base, but also you have to make those plays. It's like, well, it's the major leagues. Like, you guys are the ones that are making the decision to put him at second base. So the responsibility should be to make the plays at second base. Just come out and say, you got to make those plays. Like, it's just so fun. Irks me sometimes when he always qualifies everything. Like, stop. Yeah. They all do. Like, stop qualifying things. Just tell it like it is. Yeah, play's got to be made. It's part of the reason we lost the game. It sucks. We'll be better. That's it.
Yeah. The coach speak, trying to parse the coach speak sometimes is not my favorite activity.
Yeah.
I'll say that. But I'll also say this. I actually think that's one of the rare times we kind of didn't get coach speak from John Schneider. Like, you can't always have to read between the lines to a certain extent. And I mean, the front office is as opaque as they come, but I mean, I think him outright
saying we need to make plays is like a step.
But I mean, him outright even saying that Spencer Horwitz is, like, generally speaking, not going to be at second base, I think just like highlights the idea that going forward, and it underscores like the fact that Horwitz had not made a start at second base since August, whatever, 18th or whatever it was. And then today boots some balls as soon as he gets to second base. And when some defensive substitutions, I just think that like really tells you that when we're having these discussions about 2025, and I mean, I had said like a couple months ago, I'd have been like, oh man, if Spencer Horwitz is your everyday second baseman or is the strong side of a second base platoon, I'll take it. But I mean, that's clearly not happening.
So where do the at-bats come from then?
Yeah.
Like, that's the question.
You mean at second, you mean?
Yo, where do the at-bats come from for Horwitz?
For Horwitz.
Is he just a backup first baseman?
Right.
And he gets in now and then?
He might be, honestly.
Because for, I think you and I think the majority of fans that have watched this team over the last couple of months, like, that's the one guy that you would think should get 80%, like, of the at-bats. Yeah. So where are they going to come from? If John Schneider, who literally just said that he doesn't see Spencer Horwitz at second base, like, where? He's not going to DH because there's not enough power there. Backup first baseman is not a full-time job. And if he's not going to play second base, like, where is he going to play?
No, it kind of sounds like Horwitz would end up being just the backup first baseman, backup DH
Like, so he'll get in when he gets in.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, like, I mean, that's how it strikes me right now, mainly because I think you're right. I mean, and I think the problem is largely that Vladdy is going to take a lot of these reps at first base, even if he is playing at third, right? Even if he's playing at third, I think it was Nick Ashbourne who brought this up to me, the days of, like, Prince Fielder, Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez with the Tigers, and how, like, Miguel Cabrera would, like, quote-unquote, play at first base, but, or pardon me, at third base, but then would still see significant time at first base. Mm-hmm. I can see that exact scenario playing out for Vladdy next year, even if they do think he's going to play, like, a teensy bit more at third base. It just, a lot of this is like what ifs, because it hinges on what happens in the offseason.
It feels very much like they're about to walk into a room, there's a whiteboard, it's blank, and they just got to start over.
Yeah,
like just break everything down and just say, okay, we know Vladdy's going to be here.
Yeah,
we know in all likelihood, well, maybe not, Bo is going to be short, maybe not. And it feels, other than that, it's like, you got a lot to figure out here. Like, there was a lot of heavy lifting that is going to need to be done by this Blue Jays front office, because there are so, so many questions. And Spencer Horwitz is basically doing all he can to solidify his role for next season. And it doesn't sound like it's enough to have a starting spot just yet, which is crazy.
There's a text here from Kevin in Toronto. Not to be that guy, but I highly doubt the Jays sign an impact bat in free agency. This team had to overpay for Kevin Kiermaier and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa just last offseason and struggled to even sign Soler. I think Horwitz is the platoon first base DH next year. That's Kevin in Toronto. I will admit it's been a long season, so I don't remember if the Jays were like credibly in on Jorge Soler, but it did feel like I only say that because I was banging the drum for Soler. I think it was probably for the best they did not sign Soler, because I don't think he's had the greatest season. I know, like, Raj, for example, was banging the drum for JD Martinez, who I think kind of sort of turned things around for the Mets, because they just generally turned their season around. But
Bellinger was a big name for sure.
Like, Chapman was another big name. I think those four guys were probably, like, apart from obviously Otani, for example, the biggest free agent bats, for example. So, and I mean, like, all of them have been like, I don't know, they're fine, I guess, like, especially offensively. But I just, apart from the late discussion we heard about Chapman, I'm not sure the Blue Jays were in, like, purposefully on any of them. And if that's the case, I think that's more of the question. Like, because I think I said this before, but it's not really about whether or not the Blue Jays will spend money this offseason. They clearly will. They have for quite a number of years now. And they've been running a top 10 payroll, certainly going into this deadline before they shipped out a bunch of money. But I mean, it's not a question of will they spend money. It's a question of will they spend money wisely?
Yeah.
Will they spend the smart money? And even if it means overpaying by a year to get Santander or Tyler O'Neill or whatever, like they did for Springer, to lure him away from signing with the Mets at the time, I think they can do it. It's just, will they do it? I don't know. It's the $1 million question, Jesse.
Well, it feels like there are definitely, you know, there's people who are angling for Santander for sure. There are names out there, again, that you can go out and get good hitters, like Teoscar Hernandez is going to be a free agent again, right? So you can run that back. Like, do you bring in a Pete Alonso and that frees up, you know, Vladdy to play a little bit more third base? Yeah. Like, this is what I mean. There are just so many questions that need to be answered for this front office that it almost feels like they're starting from scratch in a sense. Like, your pitching staff is in much better shape than your lineup is, because currently your lineup is occupied by at least 3, 4, 5 guys that you literally have no idea if they're going to be on the team. So that means if they're not, you have to spend. You have to go out and get.
You have to.
And there are, like, there's a lot of names here, man. Like, there's a lot of UFAs. And if the Blue Jays want to be competitive, which they have said time and time again, they think that they can compete for a World Series in 2025. You're not running it back. You're not, or they're lying. Like, it's one or the other.
It's one of those two things.
You have to go out and spend. And, like, it's not like Teoscar, if you want to bring him back, it's going to be cheap. That's $20, $25 million.
I'm thinking, like, he's making $23.5 million, and he's having a great
good year.
Yeah. So it's probably like $20, $25 million at least, I would think.
Yeah. So, like, you're going to have to spend a lot of money to improve this team drastically. So, you know, to say that we don't think they're going to go out and spend, like, there really hasn't ever been a point where the Blue Jays have shown you that they won't spend. They have consistently been now for the last number of years in the top 10 in terms of payroll in the major leagues. When the time is right, they do spend. They showed you that with the Shohei thing, think what you will, were they ever like serious? Was he ever serious with the Blue Jays? Maybe not, but they were clearly serious. They wanted to spend. They'll probably spend upwards of $300 million for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Right.
Like, it's not a spending problem. It is, you have to identify properly what you need to bring in. And in this case, it could be two hitters, could be even more than that, could be three, depending on what you think of these guys that are in the lineup right now.
Yeah, the shopping list, like the needs, are it's pretty long, right?
It's the longest. I think it's the longest it's been since, you know, maybe even since Ross Atkins and Bergeron have been here.
Certainly, I would say at least certainly since Vladdy and Bo and like Biggio, I guess, got promoted, yeah. Would say, right? Which was 2019, right? So, and that's,
think about it. It's like 3-4 hitters at least, and then the whole bullpen.
The whole bullpen, I would say a fifth starter, maybe a backup catcher. It's a lot of stuff to do.
Team,
a lot
dude.
Of stuff to do in the offseason. That's a lot of stuff.
That's
Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Joe Eile. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk here in the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's take a quick break here, Jesse. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line. Lots of text, 590-590, name and location. Chat a little bit about Yariel Rodriguez, who I thought had a pretty decent outing. We'll chat some Y-Rod on the other side as well. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. Still some time to give us a call if you so choose. 590-590, name and location. That is the people's text line. You're listening to Jays Talk once again. Show and Jesse with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I mean, that's ideally, that's the plan. You know, this is around the target that we had, you know, hoped for him in terms of innings. And again, what he's doing in between, I think, is really important. So we'll continue to kind of navigate it. We'll continue to kind of monitor it. He's feeling good, you know, so I think going through this now is beneficial for him. And if we can set him up to where, yeah, he's on a normal 5-day routine and you get that off-season planning, that's going to be great for him, great for us. So I like what he's doing, you know, not just, you know, on the field, but the things that he's doing, the thing that he's learning from Chris and Kev and Hosey has been really, really good.
That is John Schneider chatting about Yariel Rodriguez and his outing today. Decent outing from Y-Rod, but ultimately did not factor in as the Blue Jays do lose in extras 4-3.
Decent.
They get walked off.
You are a tough customer, eh?
He's been
tough, you know, guy to please.
He was good. He was good today.
That's just very good.
That's Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. And 590-590 is the text line. We'll go back to the text line very shortly. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. Let's talk about Y-Rod. Okay. So this is the out. This is the numbers for him. All right. 5 innings. He allowed 2 hits, 1 earned run. It was a solo shot to Jared Kelnick. 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. He threw 73 pitches. He had 44 strikes. And you're right. Decent maybe is like to not, maybe
well,
a little too harsh,
innings,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like the last outing for Yariel Rodriguez, he threw 57 pitches over 3 innings of work.
Yeah.
Right? So I think they were trying to, and like John Schneider alluded to there, I think they are trying to manage his workload to a certain extent, which, all right, like he's a rookie. He's never pitched this much in a major league season before because he's never pitched in the majors before. So I understand them being very cautious with his workload. But Yariel Rodriguez today, even including the solo home run to Kelnick, all right, including that, he was able to control the zone. He threw tons of strikes. The slider, I thought, which has gotten banged around a little bit, looked good today. The velo, normal levels for the velo for him, which is generally speaking looked good so far. But I only bring it up because they're talking about fatigue and so on from him. So that's definitely a good thing. I was generally impressed given how, so coming into this start, and I'm including the September 1st start against the Twins. Okay, Jesse.
Yeah.
So from the beginning of August to September 1st. So again, not including today's start, he had pitched 27 2/3. He'd given up 16 earned runs, 9 walks. It was an ERA of 5.20 coming into today. And then he goes out and throws 5 innings of 1-run ball. I think that's a great bounce back to a certain extent. Does that mean all the problems are solved with Yariel Rodriguez? No, of course not. But I do think given that we had, you know, rightly, I think, criticized him for a lot of blow up starts in the last month plus,
it's a good
place for him to be given that they continually talk about managing workload and fatigue and trying to get him on the right track going into 2025.
Yeah, I think you've seen enough from him this season. And there have been a lot of days where he's put up, you know, 1 earned run, 0 earned runs, 2 earned runs. Like, the guy has some juice. Like, his slider's pretty nasty. He's got the tools. You would just like to see him be able to stretch it out and be a little bit more consistent. Obviously, it was a kind of a difficult end to August. He allowed 4 earned runs and 5 earned runs and 6 earned runs and consecutive starts. But he settled down a little bit here, and you're starting to see, again, part of the reason why the Blue Jays invested the money that they invested in him. And you know that he's going to be here because they paid so much. It's just a matter of what role is he going to be. Is he going to be competing with Jake Bloss for a spot in the rotation next year, or is he going to be the long-ish guy that Bowden Francis occupied at one point in the season, and Francis is going to be in the starting rotation. Like, it's never a bad thing to have options. Certainly, like we talked about the having perhaps too many options in the Blue Jays lineup right now, and all the versatility that can present a problem, and it kind of is at the moment. But from a pitching perspective, you can never have too much good, whether it's starting pitching or long options for you. Like if Bloss needs more time in the minors next year, then so be it. If Bowden Francis is not quite as good as he's been in the last little while and he's back to being the long man, sure. Like you have, at least you have options here for the Blue Jays, and Yariel is doing everything he can to solidify a spot for next year.
It's interesting because you're right when it comes to the depth of potential starters. And there's a lot of question marks about around some of these guys. Like, we don't really know what Jake Bloss is until he comes up, but he's had a couple, he's had one big blow up spot in the minors, but generally speaking, he has looked better as of late, including the last time out for the Bisons. Bison season ends a week before the major league season does. Major league season ends on the 29th. Bison season ends on the 22nd. So, like, there's a chance we do see Bloss, maybe even for just one start down the stretch of this season. So there's Bloss, there's Yariel Rodriguez, Trey Yasevich, and Ricky Tiedemann are further away. Tiedemann because of the injury, he had the surgery. Yasevich because he's a rookie, and you know he's viewed, I think, as being a little closer to major league ready. But I'm guessing he's not going to be seen obviously this year, but probably not next year either. And Alek Manoah is certainly a part of it as well. Having said that, much like Ryu last year, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we will not see Alek Manoah for much of the season because of the elbow surgery. But because he got the internal brace, there's probably a chance Alek Manoah factors into the starting rotation plans, I don't know, like late August, mid to late August, September of next year. Probably not a huge chunk of the season, but at post-deadline plans for Manoah, obviously it's health dependent, but also just stuff dependent as well. Yeah. Both things have to be right for him. But you, like, I think you do genuinely have some options going into next year, and Yariel is one of them. And am I after today ready to say Yariel Rodriguez is going to be in the starting rotation next year? No, I think if you're making the decision right this second, he's in the bullpen and Bowden Francis is in the rotation. But I just, it's just part of that conversation, Jesse, where the more you can credibly backfill from within, the less money you have to spend.
Yes.
Like I don't want to say frivolous, but on less money you are forced to spend on areas of need in the offseason. So in theory, it's more money if you don't have to spend on Bowden Francis because he's in the rotation and Yariel is in the bullpen or on the rotation. That's more money the Blue Jays have to spend on, like, an Anthony Santander, for example.
Yeah,
or more money they have to spend on a bullpen arm. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think that's how I view it. Again, Y-Rod is going to be on the team one way or another, whether it's in the rotation or the bullpen. But I think unless things drastically change, he might start in the bullpen. But that doesn't mean, I mean, even look at Bowden Francis. Francis was a guy I kind of felt like the ship had sailed a couple of years ago on being a starter, and now look at him. So I don't think that's ever necessarily out of the question.
No, it is such a luxury to have your starting pitching first and foremost as a position of strength on your team. And that has been really where the Blue Jays have been for the last few years. Like, pitching, we've never really come in here and talked about, you know, how brutal the Blue Jays starting pitching is. Now they're not giving them a chance to win. Like, if you go up and down the line, almost every single time they're up, the Blue Jays starters give them a chance to win. And this is a team that's, what, now 8 games under 500? Like, it's pretty crazy. It just kind of underscores just how bad the offense has been at times and how bad the bullpen has been at times, because the starting rotation has been pretty good, and you're bang on. Like, they know when you go into that room and you have all sorts of things that you got to figure out in the whiteboard, you put your starting pitching, like, kind of off to the side.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a stressor heading into the offseason. And that is such a luxury. And I think it's also part of the reason why the front office truly believes that they can be competitive. Because it all starts from pitching, right? What's the old adage? Pitching and defense. Mm. Well, Blue Jays lead the league in defensive runs saved, and their starting pitching is good. So that is when you have that sort of nucleus and that foundation to your team, like, you could potentially turn things around rather quickly. Like, there are going to be some heavy lifting in the offseason, but definitely you're starting from a position of strength, and that's good to see.
The starting rotation next year is going to be fascinating to watch, because Gausman under contract until the end of 2026, Bassett under contract until the end of next year. Barrios under contract for a number of years to come. So there's your three starters. But with the three of them, and you got to include Bassett in this, but they're making, like, well over, like, the three of them combined are making, I think, well over $60 million. When you add Yariel Rodriguez in there, who may or may not be a starter, I think you get into the 70, like high 60s, low $70 million range. That's a lot of money to be spending on four players, one of whom might not be a starter next year. Like, that's essentially, like, $70 million is what? Like, that is about a quarter of your payroll, thereabouts, maybe even a little bit, maybe a little bit more in terms of fractions, but let's call it a quarter of your payroll when it's all said and done. And if maybe actually more than that, but you're spending it on four guys, right? Like, I think there's going to be some kind of, I don't want to say reckoning because that sounds very ominous, but there's going to have to be some kind of accounting when it comes to like how you're allocating dollars towards the starting rotation. If you're getting like okay production out of the starters. Now, you pointed it out. They give you a chance to win most nights. But if Gosman's not going to be an ace and Bassett's going to be a year older and going to get, you know, kind of give you a topsy-turvy couple of starts, a good one night, bad one night, good one night, bad one night.
That's the one like concern.
It's a little tough, right? Yeah. So I think, yes, you do have depth, and I think the Blue Jays can leverage that to a certain extent. But I do find the starting rotation aspect of this conversation interesting because it's a lot of money for guys who are only getting older.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
point.
And I mean,
you know, Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis are going to help that a little bit because they make a teensy bit less. Bowden Francis is making, I'm not sure how much, but he's making not a lot. I'm going to guess like $1 million or something, like if not less, frankly. But that helps, certainly. But it's just, you can't, I think that's also why when it comes to like the accounting going to happen in free agency in the offseason, you're also not going to see a lot of money being spent on the starting rotation. Like, even if they do put Yariel in the bullpen and go out and get a starter, it's not going to be like Blake Snell. You're getting like a competent fifth guy, essentially, who is not going to probably light the world on fire.
Yeah, it's really a shame what happened to Alek Manoah, because it would have been, you know, to have him back at his, even like halfway to his Cy Young season, it would just go such a long way in giving the Blue Jays more flexibility and maneuverability in trying to find different ways to move guys around and potentially get help that way, like via trade, which is pretty much what they tried to do at the deadline when they traded Yusei Kikuchi. Like, yeah, you got a pitcher back in that deal, but you also got position players too. So it would have given them a lot more leverage. But yeah, I think your point about the age is a very good one, and it's important to keep in mind that these guys are getting up there in age. But you look at a Bassett, for example, I think he's a type of guy, he doesn't throw that hard. It's kind of stuff that plays, I think, as you're getting up there in age. Like, if you're in a rebuild and you're not trying to win for the next 2 or 3 years, like, I don't really see why you would keep him around. I think he would be a perfect guy to flip for prospects. But if you're trying to make a run of it next season, I still think his stuff is good enough and it plays enough because he doesn't throw that hard that he'll be around and he'll be okay. And then you have Gosman and Berríos. You can almost always pencil Berríos in as being as sharp as can be. The Gosman one is interesting. Like, the Blue Jays, definitely not their entire future hinges on Kevin Gosman, which version of him you get.
Right.
But it would really go a long way to helping their fortunes if he can just get back to what he was in, you know, getting Cy Young votes.
Q from Winnipeg texted to say, I don't think the Jays need to go get a fifth starter. They have plenty now in the minors, like we're talking about.
Yeah.
If they are serious in making a playoff run, they need to go get a single number one rotation starter. As it stands, we do not have a game one playoff starter. Gosman and Berríos are number two at best. I think there's a chance Gosman recaptures the previous form or something close to it, because he's not been the ace I think we all expected for this season. Mm-hmm. But for reasons I laid out, I just think they're already spending so much money on the starting rotation that unless more money goes out, I don't think you are going to see them go after a number one free agent. Because, I mean, like, I think Blake Snell's a free agent this year. I think Corbin Burns is a free agent this year. There are guys who you can serve as number one front of rotation starters. I just don't see that as being particularly likely, given that, like, I think you can view it as you can get by with the rotation of Gosman, Bassett, Berríos, Francis,
no
and
doubt.
X, and then spend all that money on the position players, because that's the real need. Like, that's the, at least for now, right? I think they're just, like you pointed out earlier, there are a lot of holes to fill, lots of holes to fill, but I'm not sure the highest priority hole is a number one starter.
No, like, well, can you just ask yourself, like, do you envision a rotation of Kevin Gosman, Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, Bowden Francis, and Jake Bloss as a potential playoff starting rotation? Sure. Like, I see it as a potential starting rotation. Now you have to fill out the rest of your team. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, the pitching should be good enough. The bullpen is
the
not
bullpen,
good enough.
Yeah, the bullpen.
The
has
lineup
to be fixed,
right
yeah.
now is not good enough. But your pitching, if you would tell me that the offense is like average or above average, like, that should be a playoff team. But as currently constituted, there's just way too much pressure, and there has been too much pressure for the last two seasons on the pitching to carry the day, and they haven't been able to.
There's a text here from, let me see here, Tim in Hamilton. Actually, there were two texts about this. Tim in Hamilton, and I think this other one was from Jen in Toronto. This is from Tim. This stretch by Green has me really questioning the Nate Pearson giveaway. Obviously, he wasn't perfect, but he seemed to have a better toolkit for closing than Green. Jen says, Pearson looking good for Cubs. Did we give him up for squat and why? Please explain. I'll say this. I've not watched every single game of Pearson's for the Cubs, because, I mean, I don't know who has time for that. But at the same time, Jesse, he gives up. Yes, he has an ERA of 220 and it has in his games with the Cubs and an ERA of, a batting average of 161 and OBP of 203. All those numbers are good. He has also given up. He's a FIP of 428 and he has given up insanely loud contact, like loud, hard contact. No. That's in 10 appearances. Going into the September 4th. So maybe he's played since then, but that's from Baseball Reference. That, like, yes, he's been good on the surface, but I think the loud, hard contact to me says that that's probably not sustainable.
It's just total revisionist history to look back and say, you know, they should have kept Nate Pearson. Like, he never really once put it together for an entire season with the Jays. Like, he threw that kind of flat fastball that would just get tattooed by the opposition. Like, he's never had an ERA under 4 with the Blue Jays, and this year it was 560 when they traded him.
Yeah.
So, like, it just wasn't, whether he needed a change of scenery or whatever it was, like, they gave him ample opportunity. This is a guy who started pitching for the Jays in 2020.
Yeah.
It's now the end of 2024. If he wasn't going to figure it out in 4 seasons, it was time to move on from Nate Pearson. Whether you like the trade or not, what they got back, that's a different conversation. But he's a guy who certainly needed a change of scenery. Good for him.
Sure, absolutely.
That he's been great.
I agree. Yeah,
with the Cubs so far, we'll see if it lasts. Because based on the rest of the stats with the Jays, you know, he's struggled at times. So we're gonna keep tabs on Nate Pearson for sure. But to say they should have kept him, for me, is just a bit of revisionist.
Yeah, like
history.
It's like the Chapman deal, right? He signs the big time deal with the Giants. Hey, I like Chapman. I think he's been good for the Giants, yeah. But I'm not sure how well that deal is gonna age. Like, happy that he got paid. I'm not sure if Giants fans are gonna love that. And like, 3 to 4 years, essentially, because it's a 6-year deal,
definitely
$151 million, but I can still be happy for the guy.
Yeah.
And I think similarly, I'm happy for Nate Pearson that he's turned it around seemingly, but after everything we've seen, not only this year, but just over the course of his Blue Jays career, I am, to say the least, a bit skeptical.
Yeah.
So let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. It's a great way to put it.
Jesse, before we go, I would just like to say, it's nice for you to be back.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you.
It's a lot of fun doing this with you, so I'm happy to be back.
I actually know you've been back for a good chunk of time, but this is just actually the first time we've been back on Jay's Talk. But
Keeping us away from each other.
It's nice to borrow you to a certain extent. but how did Paris treat you? How many pain au chocolat did you have?
The craziest thing is that like all I ate was essentially like not, you wouldn't consider it healthy food. A lot of croissants.
What? Oh, okay. All right.
Pain de chocolat.
Yeah.
Like
omelette du fromage.
French onion soup, but you don't call it French onion soup. There's just onion soup.
Did you do that? Did you do that?
I called it French onion soup the first
like
three times that I ordered. Yeah.
What'd they say?
Like, what, the onion soup? Yeah. They had to like clarify. Like, what's a French onion soup? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
But I didn't eat well, but I walked a lot, and I came back, and I weighed less. I lost 5 pounds.
Sweet.
From eating like just like not good food. So I don't know if it's something in the food supply or whatever it is here. But excellent place, excellent time. But it is good to be back chatting Blue Jays baseball with you because I did miss it.
You did tell me you have started eating your French fries with mayo now. I don't know how healthy that is.
It's got to be healthier than ketchup.
That's true.
Is it not?
I don't actually know. I have no idea.
I would imagine it is. Like, as long as you're not just lathering the French fry in mayo, I would imagine it's probably healthier. It's delicious. I didn't realize how good it was.
Yeah, it's very tasty.
Like, sometimes I mix them too, which is it's a hot tip.
I'm going to start doing that more.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that.
Hey, it's good to have you back, though.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
That is Jesse Rubinov. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Cranrus Control Centers in Fort Erie and Dunville, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Jesse Rubinoff, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. Blair and Barker are back for the Mets series and the first game of the Cardinals series. I'm back next weekend, as always, from the Rogers Center. Enjoy the rest of the football today, everyone. May all your fantasy teams be blessed. I'll talk to you later.